recording, man. Yeah, I can dig it.
There's too many of you crying. Brother, 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 there's far too many of you dying.
You know we've got to find a way to bring some love and get here today.
Oh, picket lines and picket signs. Punish me with brutality. Talk to me so you can see. Oh, what's going on?
What's going on?
What's going on? Yeah, what's going on? Oh, what's going on?
Good morning, New York. How are you doing this morning? I'm excited to be on. I have a great show today. And it is 7:01 a.m. this morning. Just making sure that everybody's ready. It's getting a little chilly in New York, but the weather has been really pretty great, at least for me anyway. It's 43 degrees right now in the New York City area. And welcome to those who listen to us from across the country. We just came out of a break this past Wednesday, so we were not on the radio live last Wednesday. Just kind of took some time off for the family and for our studio. And so we are excited to be back this week with a great panel of folks. I usually have one, maybe two guests, but today we have three. So we're going to make sure that this works out and you all get to hear from some fabulous people about something I care deeply about. But before we get to an awesome show today, we're going to go to the newscast because we always want to know what's going on. That's the show, folks, what's going on. So look, we're going to go to the newscast and then come back and I'll introduce you to my brilliant guests.
Welcome to 2022 Talks, where we are following our democracy in historic times.
We are not pushing this legislation to make history. We are doing this to make a difference for millions upon millions of Americans. It's a historic day, but it's going to make a difference.
Senator Tammy Baldwin of Wisconsin celebrated the Senate's passage of the Respect for Marriage Act, which would ensure same-sex and interracial marriages are enshrined into federal law. The bill, which passed in a 61-36 vote, includes protections for religious liberties, such as exempting businesses from providing services to couples, and was supported by 12 Republicans, including Senator Cynthia Lummis of Wyoming.
For the sake of our nation today and its survival, we do well by taking this step.
The bill now returns to the House, where Democrats remain in control for the rest of the legislative session. House Speaker Nancy Pelosi says Congress will take up legislation this week to prevent a threatened nationwide railroad strike.
We must avoid a strike. Jobs will be lost. Even union jobs will be lost. Water will not be safe. Product will not be going to market. And we could lose 750,000 jobs, some of them union jobs. That must be avoided.
The move comes ahead of a December 9th strike deadline. Four of 12 rail unions lack a contract, including one union which rejected a tentative deal negotiated with help from the Biden administration. Union leaders were angered by lawmakers' decision to force adoption of an agreement which does not address paid sick leave for workers. A federal jury found Oath Keepers founder Stuart Rhodes guilty of seditious conspiracy for plotting to prevent the peaceful transfer of power following the 2020 presidential election, leading to the January 6 attack on the Capitol. Los Angeles Mayor Eric Garcetti joined 70 other mayors from across the U.S. in asking Congress to fast-track immigration protections for so-called Dreamers or undocumented immigrants who came to the U.S. as minors.
So we say clearly to Washington, pass the DREAM Act once and for all right now.
The mayors fear a possible Supreme Court decision could invalidate the DACA program, making hundreds of thousands of young adults subject to deportation. The mother of one of the victims in the Uvalde, Texas elementary school shooting has filed a federal lawsuit against gun manufacturer Daniel Defense for negligently using militaristic imagery to lure young people to purchase their guns. Finally, Twitter says it will no longer stop users from sharing false information regarding COVID-19. Company policies against misinformation on the virus led to more than 11,000 account suspensions prior to the purchase of Twitter by Elon Musk. I'm Catherine Carley for Pacifica Network and Public News Service. Find our 8 trust indicators to support transparency and accuracy at publicnewsservice.org.
That was our newscast post. There's so much going on. I could probably have a whole show just about the newscast today because things are moving around us so quickly. But it's also always my promise to introduce you to incredible people from my community and incredible friends that I have across the country who are experts on different issue areas and just really are doing important and incredible work. And recently I saw a report that was released by an incredible organization that I love very dearly called the Institute for Social Policy Understanding, the ISPU. An organization that is Muslim-led and has been doing research around different elements of our Muslim community. So not only doing research around identity, but also around issues that impact the Muslim community and how Muslims across the country feel about different social issues. And it's really incredibly important for not just the Muslim community to understand ourselves, but also for our sister communities to understand us, for politicians, for other folks doing research to understand how complex and beautiful our community is. And last week, many of us spent time with our families. You know, it's a federal holiday. Folks were off of work, and most families gather around a table to have some, you know, delicious foods. And, you know, many people already know this, but I don't consider it to be a holiday. I consider it to be a time to get together with family, especially with such, you know, work schedules and just people living around the country and not living in the same city together. And of course, we know this because, and many people feel this way because, you know, in America, we have a distorted history, and we sell holidays to people without context. And so our indigenous family does not believe that Thanksgiving is a holiday. In fact, for many who are connected to the ancestors, it brings up a lot. So through that conversation, that I was having with myself every year and of course watching online, I had seen a report just come out just a few days prior to the quote unquote Thanksgiving. And it's a report by the ISPU. And again, in continuation of the great research that they have been doing over the years around Native Americans and Indigenous Muslims. And some people might be thinking to themselves, wait a minute, what are you talking about? So this report, it's called Visions and Voices. It's the first publication from ISPU's Native American and Indigenous Muslim Stories. It's a Reclaiming the Narrative project, and it's actually the first ever photo narrative project to center the lived experiences of Native American and Indigenous Muslims in the United States. And so this is it's a in-depth research, a research conducted 17 in-depth interviews with Native American Muslims over a 6-month period. And it's just beautiful storytelling, an incredible kind of contribution in addition to the wonderful diversity of the communities that I come from. And so today I have 3 incredible guests. I'm going to get them to chime in so you can hear their voices. I have with me a dear friend, an incredible leader in our community, Mira Nagaz, who is the executive director of the ISPU. And again, that is the Institute for Social Policy Understanding, where she's responsible for the institution's overall leadership strategy and growth, and has been an incredible just voice in our community, ensuring that we as Muslim-led organizations are well-informed in the work that we do, that we get to actually have a Muslim-led institution that we could, you know, cite for sources. So I want to welcome Mira here to What's Going on WBAI.
Good morning, Linda. It's so great to be here with you this morning.
Good morning. I get people to wake up super early to be on WBAI. I'm telling you, it's a good time. We got people, you know, getting ready for school, going to work. So our listeners are loyal, and I'm excited that they get to hear from you. We also have with us Brennan McDaniel, who is a PhD student in the Department of American Studies at Yale University, and drawing from Native American studies, Islamic studies, post-colonialism, and psychoanalysis. His research concentrates on the political economics of religion and secularism in the 21st century United States. And he is one of the main investigators as part of this research around Native American and Indigenous Muslims. So welcome, Brennan, to WBAI.
Thanks so much, Linda. I appreciate it. I'm so glad to be here.
Awesome. And of course, we have, and I got excited when I was reading the report, because I was like, wait a minute, this is my brother right here. We have with us Ed Sanders, who is, of course, first and foremost, of course, my Muslim brother, but he's also born and raised in Harlem. And, you know, I'm from New York, so I get extra excited about the New Yorkers. And for those of you WBAI listeners, many of whom are New Yorkers, our Native brother and Indigenous brother is born and raised Harlem, and you know how they do in Harlem. So I'm excited to have you, Ed, with us. Welcome to WBAI.
Thank you. So glad to be here also.
Amazing. Dan, I appreciate you. I mean, Mira, you, please. I mean, I've been, you know, all up in this report the last few days, and it was so timely, of course, as it comes around, you know, this past couple of days where people were kind of gathering together. And it was such an incredible opportunity for me, even, you know, I had a whole lot of kids in my house, you know, teenagers, and being able to talk about this report and say, you know, how much do you understand how wonderful our community is, how diverse our community is, and talking about our Native and Indigenous Muslim sisters and brothers. And it was such a fascinating opportunity for me to have this discussion with all these young people that were at my house on Thursday. So tell me, Mira, you know, where did this come from? You know, what was kind of the process around it? And what did you hope, or what do you hope for this study, and where do you want it to go?
Yeah, thank you so much, Linda. And I'm so glad to hear that that's exactly what that's one of the things we hope will happen, that it starts conversations, and much needed ones at that. You know, this all sprung from one data point. As you mentioned, ISPU, you know, we do research on all sorts of issues and things impacting on Muslim communities throughout the country. And one of the things we look at is also demographics and just who are American Muslims. And what we found in our research is that Muslims are one of the most, if not the most diverse faith group in our country, with no majority race or ethnicity. And nestled in that brilliant, vibrant community and diversity is 2% of Muslims who identify as Native American. So that was sort of the jumping off point for this study. We looked at that data point and thought, wow, who are these people? Where are they? You know, what are their stories? What are their challenges, hopes, dreams, lived experiences? And we set out to answer those questions. Native peoples make up just under 2% of the U.S. general population. And, you know, Native people make up, you know, roughly 2% of the Muslim population, and Muslims make up an estimated, you know, 1% or just over 1% of the American population. So this is a really vibrant community within a community, or within communities, let's say. And both experience toxic stereotypes, right? Both Muslims and Native peoples experience toxic stereotypes in our country, harmful biases, and quite frankly, rank racism, as well as erasure in public discussion. And so we thought this project would be just a really important way to highlight the unique stories, the vibrant community that this community is. What I hope for the future, or what I hope happens with this research, one, I hope what happened around your family table last week happens, that it starts a conversation, that it gets people to know some of these wonderful people. We'll hear from Ed a little bit later, who was profiled as one of our participants. I hope that it sort of allows people to think about American, or sort of our country's people's identity, and belonging, away from a white lens, or away from a mainstream lens. So often people are thought of in relation to the white mainstream majority. And I hope this project really helps us get away from that and look at our identity and just who we are as a people in a different way. So I'll stop there, because my colleagues are brilliant and I want to hear from them, but that's it in a nutshell.
I love that. I'm going to go to you, Brennan, as kind of one of the lead investigators on this research project. And I kind of wish I was you. I'm actually mostly jealous of Brennan, to be able to be kind of leading on conducting these interviews and hearing what I'm sure were incredible stories and incredible humans that you were able to kind of talk to. And as Mira said, you know, listen to their dreams and aspirations and their stories and their, you know, connection to identity. I'm sure it was probably something really rewarding and fulfilling. Again, I wish I was Brennan. Tell me, Brennan, about, you know, the project and your kind of research and kind of how this all kind of came together into this kind of beautiful story and kind of report that we're reading right now.
Thanks so very much, Linda. I appreciate that a lot. Yeah. I started graduate school about the time that I converted to Islam. And, you know, when I would tell people, hey, you know, my interests are both in Native America, you know, being Melungeon from East Tennessee, you know, our ancestors are kind of, you know, wrapped up into this kind of, you know, broader history between Native peoples and Muslims in the United States. And, you know, just like you sort of introduced the show with, you know, people would always be like, what do you mean? You know, are there even any Native Muslims? And, you know, it's tough purely within an academic realm to try to find, you know, resources to do this kind of research on a grand scale. But then when my advisor, Zarina Graywall, actually, you know, I came across and heard about this project at ISPU, which was funded by the Doris Duke Charitable Foundation on Native Muslims, you know, I kind of was like, all right, people are finally starting to catch on and starting to see that Native Muslims do in fact exist. And it was in sort of my earlier research that I, you know, as an undergraduate rather, that I came in contact with Ed and with several other Native Muslims. And so I sort of, you know, jumped on board and, you know, just started reaching out to people, you know, so trying to find participants for this project, you know, was, you know, it started during the pandemic. Basically just started, you know, through family and friends, right? So many Native Muslims, as it turns out, you know, we were expecting, I guess, perhaps coming from one urban area or what have you. But it turns out that Native Muslims are all over the United States. And we're actually getting, you know, kind of, we got rather, an abundance of responses. So, you know, it's not only that Native Muslims exist, which, you know, the project's main goal was just, to raise awareness around this fact, but they're actually all over the country and they are sort of, organizing themselves. They're sort of forming informal and formal networks. To be able to sort of capture their stories here was, amazing.
Oh, I mean, they, so far, just, I wish I could be friends with all of them, but maybe one day I will. So Ed, I, am very intrigued, by your, beautiful story and your, you know, of course, your, you know, conversion, to Islam. And of course, as you know, I'm Palestinian, American, and my own kind of, you know, connection to an indigenous people. And so this is a really dear, kind of story to me. So I know you're born and raised in Harlem, and I would love for you to, you know, tell our folks here at WBAI a little bit about your story and kind of your exploration of your own identity as a Native and Indigenous Muslim.
Okay, well, thank you for having me. And I was born and raised in Harlem. I was actually born in Harlem Hospital. I was born in East Harlem. I was born in Harlem Hospital, raised in East Harlem. When I became a senior in high school, my father's from here. So my Native American connection is through my father. My mother's a Native New Yorker, three generations of Native New Yorkers. But my father's from the South. And North Carolina, where I live at, has one of the biggest Native American populations on the East Coast. A lot of people don't know that. Now, New York has actually surpassed North Carolina as having the biggest Native American population. North Carolina has something like 50 or 60,000 people who identify as Native American. And I think New York State has actually surpassed that. Hmm. I work for the North Carolina Court of Appeals, and I am actually the media person for the tribe. So I serve in a few different capacities with the tribe. I am a representative for the Native American Housing Authority. I'm on the board of an organization called United Tribes, and I enjoy doing the work for the tribe. But as far as my story goes, is I came to college here, stayed, and I enjoy being a North Carolinian. I love New York too, but I enjoy being a North Carolinian. And that is how I connected to my Native roots. A lot of African-Americans will tell you, mostly any African-American to tell you they have Native roots somewhere. Mm-hmm. And my grandmother was no different from anybody else. She told me a long time ago that we were part Native American. And, I became interested in that. And I always started doing research, and I love genealogy. I've always done genealogy ever since, I can't even remember. But I actually found the tribe and connected to them. And it's funny because our tribal administrator, each tribe has a tribal chairperson, mm-hmm. and they also have a tribal administrator. And our tribal administrator is my cousin. Mm. And I found that out through research and Facebook. As Brendan tell you, me and him are Facebook friends, and I enjoy Facebook as far as I have two faces on Facebook. I'm a research person and I like to joke around. Mm-hmm. But I posted a picture on Facebook of my great-grandmother who has these, I guess going by features is not the best way to, determine Native American ancestry, but her pictures, I had posted her picture, and the tribal administrator asked me, she said, "Where did you get that picture from?" We had become Facebook friends at that time. Mm-hmm. And I said, "That's my great-great-grandmother." And she said, "That's my great-great-grandmother."
Wow.
So we was like, we realized that we're cousins, and we figured out how we are related, where her great-grandfather and my great-grandmother were brothers and sisters. Mm-hmm. And some documents have him listed. I'm not sure if you know this, but the way Native American heritage is determined here in the South is that when you look at a census record, somebody is listed as mulatto. Mm. Now, when we think of the word mulatto, we think of a person who is black and white. Mm. But that wasn't the case back in the day. When somebody was a mulatto, you were either black and white, or black and Native American, or white and Native American. Mm. That's how they determined who was what, and especially after they told you, say, hey, if a person, census taker asks a person, what is your race? They'll say, well, I'm this and that, and they'll put down mulatto. And that's just another way of erasing people. Mm-hmm. Instead of just saying Indian on the census, they would just put you mulatto. That way, nobody would know if somebody was to look at you, you try to make a claim of land. See, it's about land. If you try to make a claim of land and you're just listed as a mulatto, somebody can say, well, you're either black or white. They determine who you are. I'm done with those days. I'm not with people labeling, you know, people telling me who I am. Mm. I tell you who I am now.
That's right.
You know, and that's the way, you know, you figure things out. And so my tribe, the Okanichi, have always been in the area where my family lived. And there's a report called Okanichi Town, and it has a picture of my other, of my aunt, who is my great-great-grandmother's sister. Mm. So it has a picture of her in this report. And so that just lended more to say, hey, look, my people have been here for a long time.
That's right.
You know, and it's just really, and I love being a part of the Native American community. And, you know, it's just fascinating, you know.
Beautiful. And, you know, Ed, I wanted to, you know, I've been to some, you know, reservations, and I was at Standing Rock during mm-hmm. the height of the, you know.
Yes, I remember that.
Yeah. And one of the things I wanted to ask you about this in relation to Islam, you know, I went there, of course, as a, you know, a sister, and I wanted to be in service to the people of Standing Rock. And when I got there and I was able to sit, it was literally around this time. It was, you know, that the kind of week of, you know, Thanksgiving or whatever. And it was brutally cold out there. And I was able to spend a lot of time with, you know, our indigenous elders there who are not Muslim. But what was incredible to me was the level of spirituality of our Native sisters and brothers and communities, that I felt so connected to my own Islam through their own spirituality, which was not Muslim. Like it was something about, and I wanted to ask you, Ed, for you as, you know, an African American Native Muslim person, is there something for you about, or do you feel that strength of connection between kind of indigenous people and Islam? Like, was there something there for you that felt natural to be a Muslim and also a Native?
Yes. And I'll tell anybody this. The first time I ever attended a powwow is a Native American gathering. Mm-hmm. And the first time I ever attended a powwow, I was there. I didn't know anybody. This was my first one. But something told me that I am related to these people. This is a totally different tribe. This is not even my tribe. Mm. This is a tribe like maybe like 45 minutes from where I live at. Mm. And I just kept getting this feeling. There was a feeling, you know, and, you know, it was just a feeling. I'm not saying it was any religious, you know, experience. I'm just saying it was a feeling that I was related to these people. It's something just kept telling me I'm related to these people. And a few years later, through my genealogy and my DNA, I found that I was related to many of those people from that tribe. Mm. Because the tribe would be from where I live at, the tribe is 45 minutes. And from that tribe to where my tribe is from is maybe like 2.5 hours. Mm-hmm. So the people probably migrated. See, and what you consider a Native American in North Carolina is one of the stipulations for being a tribe is that you're related to the other tribes. That mm-hmm. sounds kind of kooky, but that's one of the stipulations, is that you have to be related to the other tribes. Mm. So I'm actually related to people in, there's 8 state recognized tribes here in North Carolina, and I am related to people in each one of those tribes distantly. Mm. And I found this out through genealogy and research. So to answer your question about the feeling, yes, I've had that feeling before, and I have never, I'm 58 years old, and I've never had that feeling of anything like that before. Mm. You know, it was just a feeling of, these are my family members. These are my people, you know. And I guess the only other time I felt like that was when I took Shahada here in North Carolina at Shaw University, HBCU. I'm not sure if you've ever heard of it.
Mm-hmm.
but it's one of the only schools with a working with a complete mess sheet that the university is trying to keep us out of now. So
that's beautiful. For WBAI listeners, Shahada is a declaration that new Muslim reverts or converts take to become Muslim, and so that's what our brother Ed is referring to. Brennan, there were so many incredible people that you were able to kind of interview and listen to their stories, and of course record their stories. Were there some things that kind of stood out to you, or, you know, as you think about those conversations? Obviously Ed is one of them. And were there other moments where you were like, wow, like incredible?
Yeah, definitely. So similar to Ed, you know, I was, found some of the participants just through, you know, my own community are, you know, like Ed said, the tribes in North Carolina are very well connected. And my community in East Tennessee sort of lacks recognition, but we do have kinship with largely the Saponi tribes in North Carolina, as well as the Monacan Indian Nation, which is the federally recognized Saponi tribe in Virginia. And so I started out, going through people that I knew, and Ed sort of, you know, put us in touch with some other folks in North Carolina. But then, you know, having the support of the entire ISPU team, we sort of, you know, put out these calls nationwide. And, you know, like I said at the start, I sort of imagined that most people would be in the Southeast, but they came from all over the place. And, you know, each of their stories about how they converted to Islam looked very similar. They were sort of, pretty recent, but, we were surprised that, you know, we sort of entered it rather sort of imagining that, you know, like us, that, you know, some of them or the majority of them would be reverts. But in fact, we actually came across multiple families of intergenerational Muslim native peoples. So one of our families is the Itawi family from the Monacan Indian Nation, who, you know, is back and forth between West Virginia and Dearborn. And then, you know, one of our research assistants, Huda Rahman, it goes to my alma mater, I guess, Vassar College in upstate New York. And it turns out, too, that she had a native Muslim friend there who was born into the faith. And his mother also participated as well, Alethea Redclay. So it was so cool for me to see that, you know, there's actually, you know, generations of Muslim native peoples in the United States. And not only are they intergenerational too, but they also come from a, you know, wide variety of schools of thought. We interviewed people who identified as Sunni, some are Shia, some just called themselves Muslim or non-denominational. And they also are, there's a wide array of relationships that people have with their tribal communities too, whether it's sort of reconnecting recently or, you know, sort of being born on the reservation and sort of never leaving. And they all kind of, you know, to an earlier point, they all kind of, you know, imagine their native identity as being so in line with Islam, and like their activism sort of, you know, as a Muslim or as a native person, we're so interlinked and, you know, concerned about the same thing. So, you know, it kind of confirmed a lot of what we suspected, but couldn't quite say for sure, that there are sort of a long, complex history between native peoples and Muslims in the United States that is still sort of ongoing and is actively sort of being developed, you know, today. Yeah, you know, I think sort of the broader commentary is that, you know, Native Muslims are not only diverse in their beliefs and in their tribal backgrounds, but where they work. You know, Native Muslims are working in law, in public policy, media and television, higher education. They're in artistic and creative fields. They work for cultural organizations. And several of them also have leadership positions like Ed does within their tribal community, too. So it's, you know, it was so fascinating to me that, you know, it's sort of a, you know, all across the board, you know, any level of society that we have Native Muslims kind of participating.
I feel like there needs to be a book written, because I would read it, and maybe even a documentary. So you all should think about that. I'm sure Doris Duke Foundation would love to fund Mira a documentary about this report, because I think it's a story that needs to be told. And I appreciate what you said, Brennan, about this idea that that our Native American indigenous family is just as diverse as our larger Muslim family. And I think that we as Muslims in this country for so long have been at the margins of the story, and having the Institute for Social Policy Understanding bring our voices to the center, and especially those in our community who are also often invisibilized. And I feel like, you know, this idea of Native American and indigenous people is even something that's not common amongst us in our Muslim American community. So I hope that there are more projects to come from this. And I would love to be part of promoting that. So I'm going to remind my WBAI listeners, first, it's 7:35 a.m. this wonderful morning here in New York City. And I love that Ed is from New York and still has love for New York, because New York is New York. But of course, he's down in North Carolina right now, which is actually where my sister lives. She lives in Greenville, North Carolina, a little farther away from you. But this morning, folks, we are talking to incredible human beings. And I'm just so privileged to be able to have a show where I can introduce you to people. We have Mira Nagaz, who is the ISPU executive director. And that, again, is the Institute for Social Policy Understanding. And look them up. They have so much incredible research over the years, again, around different segments of our Muslim community, and some research on identity, but also around how Muslims feel in the electoral kind of realm, around social issues and social policy. It's really been incredible to feel more well-informed and actually feel more well connected to my own community. Because sometimes as activists and organizers, we assume things about our community, and having an incredible institution like the Institute for Social Policy Understanding giving us actual information based on research is so important to our work. So again, we have Mira Nagaz, who is the ISPU executive director. We have Brennan McDaniel here with us today, who's a principal investigator and a PhD student at Yale University, who kind of helped to gather many of the interviews as part of this project for the ISPU called Visions and Voices. It's the first publication from ISPU's Native American and Indigenous Muslim Stories, and having it's a kind of photo narrative project. So it's an interviews with photos of these incredibly beautiful Native American and Indigenous people. And we also have with us Ed Sanders, who's from the Okanichi Band of the Saponi Nation out in Zebulon, North Carolina, who is one of the folks that is part of this narrative project. And so I'm just really sitting here in total gratitude and in fascination. And I wanted to go to you, Mira, you know, just kind of broader here around the kind of the work of the ISPU. And, you know, I've seen some of the other kind of photo narrative projects that ISPU has done before, and kind of been to some of the, you know, events around that. And just let, you know, just, it's just beautiful for folks to really experience the stories and the people, and especially, you know, in a world that we live in that oftentimes is vilifying and marginalizing Muslims, and where there's so much conversations that are about us without us all over, whether it's in the media, even being able to find stories, you know, at the library that center our voices is not always easy to do. And so I'd love to for you to share a bit more about kind of the vision of ISPU when it comes to this, these storytelling projects. And then if there's something that you have in store for us coming soon, I know that there's a kind of another level of this particular project. So I'd love for you to share a bit more about that.
Sure, Linda. Thank you so much. I have also been listening in fascination. I could listen to Brennan and Ed and all of our other people who participated in this project all day. So thank you for giving voice to us and to everyone who participated. I think, you know, we follow in the footsteps of giants in a way. I was reading a couple of years ago, I hadn't known this story, but I felt such a kinship when I read it, W.E.B. Du Bois, you know, noted sociologist and amazing civil rights leader of, you know, about 100 years ago. Du Bois was asked or, you know, went to the Paris World's Fair about 100 years ago. And what he brought to the World's Fair, I feel like really speaks to ISPU's work. So he commissioned and worked with a group of students, African-American students, in Atlanta, I believe it was. And they put together an exhibit for the Paris World's Fair to tell the story of African-Americans in our country. And what they did was they hand drew about 60 data graphs. You know, they took data and research and they hand drew all these graphs that really told that story, mixed along with photos and books and narratives and all these other ways of sort of putting together this incredible story of African Americans in our country. And, you know, the exhibit was a hit and it really allowed people from around the world to get to know this population. And I feel like ISPU, sort of unknowingly, you know, not built on that story, but unknowingly has kind of followed in the same path where we do rigorous research. All of our research is very rigorously conducted. We have the best methodological experts as advisors and PIs, people like Brennan, who take the lead on these research projects and really make sure that we are, doing it in the best way possible. And we do that in a lot of different ways. We have a lot of data, right? We do American Muslim polling where we survey and get quantitative data around a whole host of issues. And we also use qualitative methodology like this particular project, exploring Native American and Indigenous Muslim stories. All of it combined tells the story of a community or gives voice to a community who is so often either erased in the public square and just not given consideration at all, or is often vilified, right? Or misunderstood, or, you know, just a lot of other things I could say. But, you know, Muslims either don't have a voice often, or when they are brought into the public square, it's always telling people what they're not, you know, who Muslims are not. We are not this, we're not that. Our stories really are, our work really tries to get away from that, right? And amplify voices, amplify the lived experiences, amplify the struggles, the strengths, the opportunities, and really think about not just sharing that information, but how do we solve some of these challenges, right? What are effective ways that we can solve some of these challenges? How do we bring people together? Our work is not just for Muslims. It's for everybody who cares about equity and justice and our country being the country that I think we all aspire it to be, a pluralistic country where everyone has a voice and everyone's story matters and everyone's identity is respected. So I'm just happy that we are able to provide the scaffolding, for example, to give voice to Native Muslims in this particular project and to give voice to lots of different parts of our communities and, you know, people in our country in the public square through all of our work. To answer your other question, which is what's next for this particular project, as you mentioned, and as Brennan mentioned, this is the first of two parts to this project looking at Native Muslims. And the next part, I think if you were listening to Brennan very intently before, as he was talking about some of the themes that have been coming up, it'll be much more of that. So we are looking at all these stories as a whole. You know, you got to hear from Ed today and hear his great, you know, sort of a little snapshot of who Ed is and how he came to be Muslim and sort of his experiences in North Carolina and as a Native person. But what Brennan is going to do and the team is really going to take those as a whole, this whole group of people, and kind of tease out more themes. What were we finding at a meta level? So that's really exciting. And if you're interested in learning more, come back in the spring to www.ispu.org so we can learn more.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. I'm definitely coming back. So don't leave, folks. WBI listeners, we are going to go to a really quick break and come back and wrap up this incredible conversation with our fabulous guests, Brennan, Mira, and Edward. So we'll be right back from break.
Come on! This is my
work hard, every opportunity to break walls, fighting all the lunacy that they cause. Respect here to you and me, the same God, giving you the right facts. We keep repeating that Islam has been hijacked. We ain't like that. There's a lunatic goes on a rampage, using violence, and I'm outraged. This is senseless, and it's gruesome. Please don't let this be a Muslim. Oh man, we're all vilified. This thing was savages, uncivilized. Islam is peace. Nah, that's a front. It's all deceit till they get what they want. Don't trust them, even the nice ones. Wait till the fight comes. Mike Tyson, not fair. The KKK and the Timothy McVeighs, militia brigades, the old crusades. They are all renegades from the faith that you claim. It is them we should blame. I don't blame you, you should refrain too. Believe when we say that it ain't true.
I know what they call us. They'll try to blame all us. The prophet lived in.
Welcome back, WBAI listeners. You were just listening to my friends, Native Dean. And then we went into the Lumbee song spirits of the Lumbee tribe. That was so beautiful. I could literally sit here and listen to that for the next hour. But I had incredible people and that you all have been listening to with me on this incredible Wednesday morning of November 30th. So we've been talking about the beautiful diversity of Muslim communities. And I think one of the things that was also moving me about having this conversation, and I hate to bring up this man, but unfortunately he has become a part of our lives. You know, when I was listening about, I don't know how long it's been now, maybe 2 weeks now, that, you know, Donald J. Trump is, you know, was announcing his run for president again in 2024. And the first thing that came to my mind was, here we go again. And the reason why I say here we go again as a Muslim American is that I already know that in the next potentially 18 months or so, what we're going to start hearing again and again is who is going to, particularly on the Republican side, who's going to hate Muslims the most and who's going to have more things to say about us. And, you know, even in the announcement that Donald J. Trump gave, he already started talking about Islam and Islamic terrorism and, you know, how we already know where that goes. And so, you know, being able to use our platforms and not to be bystanders in conversations about Muslims and those that will be had about us, without us. It was important to me to use my platform to center the voices of people in my community. And in particular, those in my own community who oftentimes do not have a platform. You know, they're not on the big Muslim stages. You know, people in my community who, I don't know if even the Muslims know that they are, you know, there, and they are, you know, we are connected to incredible people like Ed and others. You know, Ed, if there was something that you wanted to tell our listeners today, just about, you know, how you want to be able to show up in this world so whole. I mean, Native and Indigenous and Muslim and Black and all the things. Really, you are really all the identities in a country. You are like the epitome of the identities that this country just doesn't know what to do with. And so I feel like you're just special upon special upon special. So if you had a message for our listeners and just the world and at large, what would that be, Ed?
Well, I would just say, listen to people's story. Listen to, you know, you can't know a person unless you talk to them. Mm-hmm. You know, there's so many people that just, you know, just pass judgment, and they don't ever even try to talk to a person or pick up a book. You know, I don't even know if people even read books anymore, but it's just, you gain a lot of knowledge by just talking to people. I talk to so many people. This is why I know, you know, this is what has helped me to learn who I am. I didn't just look at it in a book only. I talked to people, you know, and like you said, I'm African American, Native American, I'm a Muslim. You know, for the most part, I'm part of, you know, I think it's, you know, I'm part of a group that's really not the best looked upon, you know, in this country. But I don't let that get me down. You know, I love being around the Muslims. I love being around the natives. You know, I walk in two worlds, you know, I walk in two worlds. And the only thing I can say to people in general is just be, you know, try to gain knowledge of people. You know, I learned more about being a Muslim, and I also learned more about Christianity after I became a Muslim. Mm. You know, that sounds kind of weird, but I learned more about Christianity, you know, some good and some bad, after becoming a Muslim, because I try to, you know, I have parents who are open-minded people and, you know, always taught me to love myself, and, you know, and I in turn love myself and I love my people, you know, and that's the one message if I had to bring to anybody, was just learn about things.
You know, I love as much that. As you can. I love learn that. I appreciate that.
You're welcome. Yes, ma'am. Mm.
Mira, if people want to learn more about the ISPU, please tell them how they can do that.
Absolutely. You can find pretty much everything you want to know about us at www.ispu.org. And that includes information about the organization itself, as well as all of our research is available freely to everybody. And it includes toolkits and research and downloadable graphs and everything else you might want to find.
That's wonderful. So thank you, Ed and Brennan and Mira. And I hope to get to meet, I already know Mira, but hopefully I'll get to meet Brennan and Ed in real life sometime soon. So I want to just say thank Inshallah. You so much. Inshallah, which Inshallah. Means God willing. Get to meet you all very soon. So WBAI listeners, you know, that was our show for today. Again, you go to the ispu.org and you get to kind of read a little bit more about this report and this conversation that we had today. And Ed reminded me about books because he said people should be reading books. And many of you know, yesterday was Happy Publication Day for me. I have a new book that's out in the world called We Are In This Together. And it's a adaptation of my memoir. It's a bit for a younger age, folks, but honestly, I've had a lot of adults contact me that they've read it too. And it is important. It talks a lot about kind of my childhood and as Ed said, you know, getting to learn a bit more about my story. How did I get here? Who am I? Where am I from? And I think by extension, it really shares the story of many in my community who haven't had the chance to have a platform like mine. And so we are in this together. It's WE:RE, in this together. It is wherever books are sold. So you can get the book anywhere. And it has a beautiful cover that I love so much. And it kind of depicts someone adapted a photo that I had. And it makes me look like a superhero. And I don't believe to be a superhero, but to see little Muslim girls get to go walk into a bookstore or library and get to see that just means a lot to me. So we are in this together wherever books are sold. We're going to be back, of course, next week on Wednesday. And to the WBAI listeners here, can't be on the radio without you. So make sure you're supporting WBAI to make sure that we keep bringing you these incredible guests and these incredible stories. And if you have ideas about shows, you could always just drop me a tweet, tag me. You know, you could comment on one of my Instagram posts, send me a direct message. Love to hear from all of you. And so I will be back on next Wednesday. And thank you so much for supporting us here at WBAI.
November 25th to December 11th for the 30th annual African Diaspora International Film Festival. The festival is back in person in Manhattan with guest filmmakers, moments of reflection, and a great selection of 89 award-winning socially relevant narrative and documentary films from 44 different countries. Celebrate Black love, enjoy music films, and film theater, a spotlight on South African cinema and Afro-European actors, and discover new independent voices in the Black cinema world. The 30th annual African Diaspora International Film Festival from November 25th until December 11th. Details at nyadiff.org or call 212-864-1760.
Remember, the whole reason New York City housing, NYCHA housing, was built the way it was Corbusier understood that if he did not have light coming in every window and if every room did not have air and light, people could not thrive. That was the whole reason for getting rid of the tenements that go with it.
Maureen Coates, environmental lawyer with Planet A Strategies. Hi, I'm Michael G. Haskins, host of Living for the City on WBAI 99.5 FM, Wednesdays at 11 a.m. Every week, myself and senior producer Jillian Jonas take an in-depth look at the city of New York as it is developing right before our very eyes. We bring on grassroots organizations fighting to have their voices heard in how the community in which they live will grow and prosper into the future. So tune in to Living for the City Wednesdays at 11 a.m. over listener-sponsored WBAI 99.5 FM and WBAI.org on the web.
COVID-19 variants are still around. It's a good thing there are new boosters targeted to take them out. The new bivalent boosters are here. Bullseye. Everyone 5 and older should get boosted today. To learn more, visit nyc.gov/vaccinefinder or call 877-VAX4NYC.
That message brought to you by the New York City Department of Health. This is WBAI New York. Your speed can feel slow when you're driving. But if you hit someone, it's terrifyingly fast. Drivers, look for pedestrians and cyclists and slow your turns to 5 miles per hour. Speeding ruins lives. Slow down. Brought to you by the Vision Zero Initiative.
Holidays bring us all together. So let's stay up to date with COVID-19 vaccines and boosters.